Hey, come on in. I really feel like we've reached a place in our culture where religious conversations can seem tense or even taboo. So every week, I invite a different guest to sit down with me to talk about what they believe, what shaped that belief, and why it matters. My name's Tony Vicenda, and this is The Threshold. Hi, Michael. How's it going?
Okie dokie, Tony.
How was your day today?
Not bad.
Do anything exciting?
Well, not really.
Not really?
Went to work, hung some shelves.
The general things. Could you tell people a little bit about yourself?
Well, sure. So my name's Mike. Probably figured that one out. I spent a lengthy amount of time in the Midwest. Grew up in St. Louis, settled in a small town in Indiana for far longer than intended. And I'm actually a recent Seattleite. Last summer moved the family, like 2,000 miles or so, mostly because my wife and I had always thought it'd be nice to settle in a big city. We kind of liked the Pacific Northwest, big pine foresty kind of things. And so the opportunity came up. New job looked promising. So we moved cross country.
Awesome. And you're married? Any kids?
Yep. Got a wife of 15 years. Sound about right? You wouldn't know.
I wouldn't know.
Yeah. Geez, it'll be 16 years soon. And we got two kids, boys 8, girls 10. Yeah, I got the whole nuclear family thing going on.
Going on, yeah.
Believe me, stereotypical Midwesterner.
Now, I want to ask a couple questions to kind of help people get to know you a little bit better. And sure. So let's start out with the most cliche icebreaker question ever asked anywhere. And that's, if you could have any one superpower, what superpower would you have and what would you do with it?
Ooh. The ability to teleport to any location on demand.
All right. Where would you go? Where would you teleport to?
Weekend vacations would become a lot more interesting.
Not just let's hop up to Bellingham or...
We're not going to go over to Woodinville this weekend. Let's go to Antarctica. Sure. Why not?
Awesome. Now, what is one of your... earliest significant memories? Like, what's an early memory that you kind of hold on to as being important?
Probably debating dinosaurs with my parents.
Was this a common debate?
In hindsight, far more common and frequent than probably my parents would have liked. But this is good foundation for my relationship with my son.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he's 8, but he's sort of like this mini me.
And were you pro-dinosaur or anti-dinosaur? What was the debate?
Not so much a debate as I'd rattle on about the history of dinosaurs through the years, the timeline of Earth since, you know, Earth cooled. Second or third telling, my parents were kind of tired of it. Around the 8th or 9th telling, they could recite it by heart, and then they started getting me different books.
That's awesome. So what is the best meal you have ever had? Where did you eat it and who are you with?
So I got two.
Okay.
The best meal in terms of overall food quality was probably in, I want to say, the outskirts of New Orleans, with a couple of colleagues through work. Went out to eat at a 4-star restaurant and had a tasting menu.
Oh, wow.
It was extremely tasty, Tony.
Yeah.
Like, really, really tasty.
Was it Cajun cuisine? Was it French? What was it?
No, it was more French. Of course, all chef-inspired cuisine. So we're talking about very fancy soups, small amuse-bouche before every major course, just layer after layer of relatively small portions, but incredibly tasty food. Very, very flavorful meal, paired with nice wines, a little port to go with dessert.
Nice.
Wonderful dinner. The other one that would vie for that is probably Thanksgiving a couple of years ago.
What made that one stand out?
I got a brother-in-law, and he had just bought a smoker. So he smoked him a turkey.
Yeah.
That was the best turkey I've ever eaten, including my wife's food, including his previous Thanksgiving turkey that he deep fried.
Yeah.
It was wonderful at his house, a little bit smaller house. At least it seems smaller when you pack 23 people into it. My wife is first of six. So at this point in our lives, basically all of her siblings have gotten married. There's a whole bunch of cousins for our kids. So once or twice a year, we go over to her side of the family, and it's just a giant family-centric party. That meal lasted something like 7 hours with everybody making something, cleaning something, just the ongoing day-o-Thanksgiving. But it's a really enjoyable time.
And did you grow up with a lot of siblings? Or you?
Nope. I am first of two. My kid sister is 8 years younger. So the mental model I have of her is she's like 12. And that's because I permanently left home around when I was 20 or so. Mm-hmm. You know, you get out of college and you hit the point where, well, I'm not going back home. I'm going to go off to like grad school and work and life and things. And so I just keep picturing her as 12. She's in her early 30s now and doesn't like that mental model in my head. I think her husband thinks it's a little funny, but whatever.
Yeah. Did you ever tell her about dinosaurs?
I'm sure I have. Probably ad nauseum.
Yeah, my wife grew up with just her twin sister and her younger brother, and family events were very small. For me, family events were like 50, 60 person affairs.
Oh, yeah.
All day long, sometimes multi-day events at any given opportunity. And so and my dad is a big smoker of meat, so I'm very familiar with that good smoked turkey flavor.
Yeah, so, someday I hope to be a good smoker of meats, but I'd like to get the house unpacked first.
Yeah.
We did just kind of move across country, so getting new major grill and appliances is going to be out for a little while. Maybe the summer.
And I know we can't talk specifically about what you do, but what is your educational background or what is your career path in whatever way you can express that?
So, as some would say, I'm a big geek, Tony.
The dinosaurs didn't tip anyone off.
And in the background, I believe your wife just snickered. Yeah. Okay. So dinosaurs, Legos. Yes, I played a bit with Erector sets growing up. The little circuit building things were somewhat entertaining. And then I discovered computers, got into that, came out here to work for one of the big tech firms floating around the Seattle area. And
there's a few. There's just a handful.
Just the one.
Yeah, just the biggest,
two.
Just the biggest ones in the world.
The top like four or five.
Yeah.
So it's a good market for that. Education wise, I picked up a bachelor's degree, again, computer centric. Took a swing at grad school, decided that was not a great play for me. Years later, I ended up working for a university. Took a swing at grad school again, picked up a master's in computer science, and then just kind of hit the point in the career where, yeah, it's time for a change. Oh, hey, big high-tech job in Seattle. Why don't we go over there?
I want to transition into the main question we ask here on The Threshold, and that's if somebody walked up to you on the street and said, hey, could you tell me in a few minutes what you believe? How would you answer that question?
I have remarkably little faith in the supernatural or the spiritual. So I'd have to answer that as atheist.
Okay. And you say remarkably little faith. Is that none, or is that there may be a spiritual reality, but I don't know what it is, or I don't have any opinions about it, or what are your thoughts?
I've had spiritual experiences, just they don't have a God in them. I also say remarkably little because, well, my wife's not an atheist. She's a relatively devout Catholic.
Yeah, which is how we know each other. I asked you to be on the podcast because Michael is he attends regularly, irregularly at church with his wife and his kids at the parish where Father Parrish and I work. And so I think it was probably knew you for 3 months before I knew you weren't. On. Yeah. Before I knew you weren't a Catholic and just busy and not well, there on, you know, Sunday.
This is not one of those things that we just are going to mention that often. You know, you don't want to stand up in the middle of a Catholic mass and say, not me.
No, I know that. I think it's more interesting because I know a lot of our parishioners, a lot of people who I know who are Catholic, no matter how devout they might be, they marry people who have a different faith history, who are non-believers, who practice a completely different religion. And typically that results in either one person goes to church, the other person stays home, or one person, you never meet their spouse, or their spouse goes and worships somewhere on Sunday. They stay there. So it was the first time that I had met somebody who, like I said, was fairly regular as far as community, seeing them on Sunday, just kind of being present.
Yeah, that does explain your somewhat quizzical expression.
Yeah.
I remember, actually, I think the first time you and I met was 3 or 4 days after we had our stuff delivered at the house. For your listeners' reference, the church you're referring to is a whopping, 4 minutes walk from my porch.
Yeah.
It's remarkably close. The family digs it. And I think we initially met as you were passing out beers at the parish picnic.
That sounds about right. Yeah.
And, here's this nice dude named Tony. He's passing out beers. And, ooh, he's got a lager. That's nice. And several months later, I think once or twice you might have asked if I'd, bring up the gifts or something. And I mentioned, not right now, but thanks for asking. I'm not sure we could do that this weekend. Several months later, you just came up and asked, so I noticed you don't, take communion. Are you Catholic? Well, no, not really. Oh, so some other kind of Christianity? Well, I was baptized Methodist. But at this point, I'm really more of an atheist. Yeah. To which I believe you said, oh, well, that's cool.
Yeah, no, and so what I'd love to know is just specifically about that. So you said you were baptized, maybe Methodist. What was your family's faith practice like growing up?
So my family is about the size of my family presently. Mom, dad, boy, girl. Gee, wonder where I got that that dynamic. And we were Methodist. Went through the Methodist version of all the sacraments, the initiation of the church, that sort of thing. Somewhat similar, but a lighter version of what my kids are doing now through the Catholic Church. Ended up getting confirmed in a Methodist church mainly because of one conversation. My mom sat down with me and said, you know, I know you don't really care that much about or are not very interested in confirmation, but this would really make me happy. I'd like you to do this. Mm-hmm. All right, Mom. And that's why I did it. I actually have a lot of respect for my kid sister because she had a similar conversation and said, Mom, I really don't want to do that. Mm. At the time, I think I was a year or two younger than when my sister went through that, and I didn't see how the rest of the church community perceived that as a formal joining of the church. For me, it was very much, I'm making Mom happy.
Right.
Going through Sunday school, coming up in the church, I had one or two friends in the Methodist church, but the actual lessons never really resonated with me. Mm. My biggest take-homes from the Methodist church growing up were not, well, with a couple of notable exceptions, and we're not really the homilies, they're not really the Christian message. It was working the soundboard at the church or helping out somewhere in the parish, helping out somewhere in the church, not the message itself. The Bible stories, yeah, you hear them growing up, you learn a bit about them, maybe read chunks of the Bible, but none of it really resonated with me. You get to college, things are a lot looser, everybody kind of discovers themselves. That's when my spiritual side started to broaden. For a long time, I figured, well, there's got to be something out there, right? There's got to be some sort of God out there, because there's all this stuff. We have a world. There's literally billions of people that believe in God. Billions of people can't be wrong. So, well, getting a degree in computer engineering, I have lots of room for electives. Mm-hmm. I packed a lot of them with psychology classes, philosophy courses, religious courses. And, man, there's a lot of religions out there.
There are, yeah.
And they all believe, in many cases, radically different things or hold different positions on some of the same topics. And there's really little rhyme or reason. It generally didn't resonate with me.
So you went through this active process of actually kind of seeking out this answer, like as you got into it. It wasn't just this like casual, like, oh, like I don't like you. There was this kind of intention behind, like, I want to know how this works, right?
You know, everybody in their late teens, early 20s has that kind of self-discovery moment. Well, I generalize to everybody. Right. I assume everybody, because it happened for me, many of my close friends, I would assume you as well. And for me, it was just this process of trying to figure out, well, what's the broader societal awareness? What motivates people? What is religion? Why? Why do people believe these things? One of my philosophy teachers phrased up his worldview best, I think, that really you have all these different religions and they're trying to strive toward the same point. It's like trying to climb up a tall mountain. You can come up different directions, but you're getting toward the same place in the end. To some extent, I think that's true. But I think we try and muddle it all with the divine. I mentioned earlier that, yeah, I have had a spiritual experience or two. It's just I don't see a lot of supernatural in it. For me, the real crux of my atheism actually stemmed from my daughter. Which is odd because she's baptized Catholic. She's had First Communion, the whole nine yards. But when she was born, it was late at night. Everybody's finally unclenching from a long day of delivery. Labor, of course, is with any first kid, is longer than any other. And I just looked at her and realized I'm holding the product of this unbroken line of genetic manipulation and evolution and inheritance going back tens, hundreds of thousands of years. And that's kind of amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But thinking back on all of that, I didn't really see the hand of anything divine in it. I saw how this actually could happen naturally, or at least through non-supernatural processes.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I realized, you know, I really just don't believe in any gods at this point.
Before that point, what would you have, like, what would you have articulated believing or not believing?
Before that point, a slow slide from vague non-denominational, non-committal theist toward agnostic.
Okay.
But at this point, I definitely believe that there aren't any gods.
So your spiritual experience was a spiritual experience of coming to believe.
My spiritual experience was to extinguish my spiritual experiences. If you want, you could phrase it like that.
Yeah.
But yes, my spiritual experience was coming to believe that there aren't any gods out there.
Mm. Now, so when you say, like, you said this thing earlier that I thought was really interesting, which was this, when you were explaining kind of climbing the mountain, like all religions are kind of climbing the same mountain. They're going up different paths, but you use this term, but they muddle it with the divine, which I thought was just a really, really interesting turn of phrase. When you say that, what I hear is, they're all trying to express a moral truth that we may see as a human or philosophical reality, but they've kind of tried to mix whatever their version of theism is into it. Is that what you're trying to say, or is that something
more or
different?
Less. I think a lot of moral truths are really moral truths in the eye of the believer.
Mm-hmm.
But there are certain lessons about how to interact together as a society, how to not be a jerk, how to be, at the risk of sounding cliched, how to be at one with yourself, your environment, and your community. Mm. There are certainly things you can do in life that improve your sense of well-being and community, and things that you can do in life that tear that down. A lot of religions try and build that up through their message, but they also have some kind of messianic figure, whether it's Jesus or Buddha or Muhammad, or a variety of prophets and deified individuals across multiple pantheons. And these all kind of propagate the notion of divinity or some sort of a supernatural reason for being.
Mm.
And I don't see a need for that.
Mm-hmm.
So that leads into the natural question of, well, if you don't have the supernatural reason for being, then how do you derive a moral code? And I find that a far more interesting philosophical question. For myself, it largely revolves around not being a jerk.
which is a recurring theme here on The Threshold.
Well, yeah. There's a lot of people out there, and it turns out they will all agree, I don't like dealing with unpleasant people.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting because, like, it's never people who I disagree with who really tend to infuriate with me. It's people typically who I agree with who are just jerks about it, who really get underneath my skin. Mm-hmm. Because it's like, yeah, but you're making it harder for everybody else.
There are some things that I would disagree with on the surface, but most of the things I find I have a strong moral objection to,
mm-hmm.
It's because they impinge upon the rights or the free will of someone else. I really don't care what you do in the privacy of your home. If you're not hurting anybody, if it makes you happier, awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Then do it. Pursue your own happiness. And if you're trying to legislate against somebody's pursuit of happiness, then maybe we shouldn't do that.
Mm.
That's one of the negative repercussions I see of muddling a moral code with a supernatural belief system in today's society.
Mm. Yeah. What leads somebody who has had this kind of spiritual awakening of there is no God to participate in a community like St. Luke's? So, like, what drives you to come on Sunday sometimes, or to come to different events or gatherings?
So many times when people ask, "Oh, well, how'd you start your career or whatnot?" I mentioned getting a couple of degrees or going to grad school and looking at a couple of different opportunities, maybe continuing with that. And then I met this girl. So you see, Tony, I met this girl. And at one point I hope you'll forgive my use of or co-opting the phrase, we had the coming to Jesus discussion, where she pointed out that she was cradle Catholic. She really liked the Catholic community. And at the time, I was at best some sort of vague theist, closer to kind of agnostic. So what all's that gonna mean, really? And that was, it was like 17 years ago at this point. And I interpreted that to mean as that she would be fairly flexible in marriage, but there are a couple inviolate things. She's going to want to have a church in her life, at least going to want to have the kids baptized. She's going to want to make sure that our children have a opportunity for church in their lives. And that if I wanted this whole thing with the girl to continue, then I at least need to be okay with that, preferably accepting of that.
Okay.
Well, obviously, if we've been married for a decade and a half, I wanted the thing with the girl to continue. Opting to marry Courtney is probably the single best decision I've ever made. I look back at it in the slightest. And if that means that her initial community moving to a town is going to be find a church she really likes, well, I'm going to help my wife find a church she really likes. Sometimes that's led to an interesting sense of community for me, albeit somewhat abstract. As you can attest, I'm highly unlikely to agree to take an offering up to the altar during the service. Part of that whole, you know, atheist moral code thing. I don't like lying.
Yeah,
that,
no,
that to
I mean,
that seems somewhat duplicitous.
I mean, it's like for me, I always tell people, like if you don't believe something, right? Like there's no need to pretend that you do. As a matter of fact, it's probably better if you don't. And so just to say no, like, or like, oh no, like that's not, I'm not like, no, I'm not super interested in that is great. And people should be okay just saying like, oh, okay. Like and moving on. And so
in some communities they are, in some communities they're not, but I think we've settled in one where it's all good.
Yeah.
And one fallout of this, of course, is that, well, I got to be open to raising my kids Catholic. In return, I did ask that we don't have our kids confirmed unless they ask for it. Because again, for me, the process of a Christian confirmation has never really been about joining the church, joining that religious community. For me, it's always been, I'll do this because it's what mom expects or because it's what all of dad's friends' kids are doing. I would like them to make that choice, even if it means they don't end up getting confirmed with their school age friends. If they get confirmed later in life, fine, whatever. It's got to be a choice for them. In return, she said, well, fine, but they at least need to go up through First Communion. All right. And so that's how we've been operating thus far.
Did those conversations come up at home with your family? Like, are your kids aware of the different way that mom and dad engage in belief? Or is it just kind of their normal reality so they don't ever question it?
A little of both. When the daughter started coming home from church and said, but dad's wrong, we had some long conversations based on that. Some very long conversations based on that. At this point, I like to think that my children see a relatively consistent moral message, if radically different wisecracking comments at the dinner table.
So you mentioned kind of an abstract community. So what are some of the goods you feel like, some of the good that you feel like you receive from that participation beyond just, is there anything beyond just wife is happy, therefore happy wife, happy life?
That's a large part of it. It does vary though. I'm not going to be joining any of the major Christian leadership initiatives in St. Luke's, for example. But sometimes it does provide an opportunity to give back. As my wife would say, atheists don't make hot chocolate. It's not a non sequitur. I promise I'm going somewhere.
I know, honestly. I'm excited to hear.
Okay, so I met the wife in college. She was finishing up a bachelor's. I was slogging away at what was ultimately an aborted attempt at a master's. Don't worry, I went back and finished. It's all good. One of the things that all the little churches did on college campus was some outreach program. I'm sure St. Luke's has some outreach programs as well. The Baptists around our school, in the middle of the bitter, bitter Midwest winters, would make giant vats of hot cocoa. And they'd take them to campus and share them with all comers. Nothing required, just, hey, it's cold. Mm-hmm. Want some hot chocolate? And if you say yes, they might mention that, by the way, we have service every Sunday at such and such church or such and such time. But a very non-threatening way to introduce young, spiritually minded students toward their church, which is really cool. You don't see atheists doing that, Tony. They just don't make hot cocoa. There's very few atheist outreach and atheist community programs, certainly in a place like the Midwest. And to some extent, I don't think it would really make sense.
Mm.
What are a bunch of atheists going to do for a Sunday community building activity? Get around and talk about how there's not a God?
Mm.
Eh.
So you're saying you're not this whole, because there is a movement in the U.S. right now for like atheist communities and churches, because atheists should be able to have the same rights and privileges that all believers have.
Okay, so first, I firmly believe in that. And this whole bit about atheists not being able to run for public office in certain states.
Is that a thing?
That it's a thing in certain states. Yeah. That kind of blows. I don't truck with that.
Yeah.
But in terms of atheists building a community, the notion of an atheist church seems like a massive oxymoron mm-hmm. to me. Like, you don't believe there's a God. Why would you build a church? Now, I wouldn't mind being an atheist for Habitat for Humanity.
Right.
Sure. But really, that's more an opportunity to go and work with your hands and smack things with a hammer.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't need to be spiritually or divinely inspired, or in my case, non-divinely inspired. I don't know. Figure out how that works.
Mm-hmm.
There simply aren't a lot of venues for such things.
Mm-hmm.
I get some community from work, occasionally a small circle of friends floating around in the area. But transplanting across the country, you kind of don't have that for a while.
Mm.
All right. Now we'll start following the wife to church, see where that goes for a bit. Oddly enough, the last church we were members in was a lovely little place called St. Tom's in the middle of Indiana. And while I did not participate in any of the more spiritually focused groups, the wife and I actually led a couple of sessions in Catholic marriage prep.
Mm-hmm.
They have a managing finances session. I'm sure
we don't actually.
Many years ago, you went through something like this.
Kind of. I mean, I think my really? Wife and I yelled at each other on the way home after a marriage prep session.
Every couple yells at each other coming home from a
that's,
marriage prep session.
That's what marriage prep is.
At least once.
That's what marriage prep is for. So you can start arguing and learn how to yell at each other before marriage begins. No, but so we did a couple. So we did like a one-on-one thing. Mm-hmm. And so there are different ways that people will be formed for marriage in the Catholic Church. You do have to get like prepared for any sacrament for varying lengths of time. It's always interesting the amount of time required given the level of commitment. Like baptism, it's usually a class, which is interesting because theologically baptism would be debatably the most significant, but at least one of the two most significant sacrements.
Yeah, but you don't see a lot of toddlers doing like at-home study for their baptism.
No, but parents are the ones who get the formation. So then you go like 2 years for first communion, 2 years for confirmation with tons of extra requirements. And then marriage is kind of like, which functionally from a social standpoint is a way bigger commitment, mm-hmm. right? Well, it's like a weekend, right? Like let's go this weekend away and we'll take a test or, you know, we'll do a couple of classes. It's always, and then priesthood, which is the closest equivalent to marriage, it's 8 years of formation. And so it's just really interesting to me always the difference in the amount of prep we require for anything. But yes, there's a series of workshops, a weekend away or a one-on-one couple process, and finances, hopefully communication, finances, family history, and sex are four of the topics that are covered in those things.
And while I was working for a university, we of course went to the university church. That actually was a reasonably positive community, I think, for both of us. But they were always looking for couples to help lead some of that long weekend of marriage prep stuff. So Courtney and I settled into a routine where we would lead the finances discussion.
Hmm.
Mostly because I can get behind financial literacy.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot of supernatural, not a lot of spiritual component there. Mostly it's figuring out how to talk about money without fighting with your spouse.
Right.
Yeah, I'll contribute to that right. In a heartbeat. So that was a fun time. Really, that church experience was fairly positive for both of us, I think, because of the priests involved. The Dominicans ran that church, and that's always how I pictured clergy. Poor and well-read.
Mm.
I like the vow of poverty. No outside influences. Very, very well read on a variety of topics. Mm. Actually, the Catholic priest that married us was a Dominican. I could resonate a lot with their message, mostly because they were trying to teach sane morals to relatively young and potentially morally ambiguous college students.
Mm. So how do you feel about, I mean, obviously you love at least one of them. So how do you feel about people who are theists, who have a deep seated belief? Do you have a particular opinion about that? Like about what that signifies in them, or whether that is a good, bad, indifferent?
I'd rather look at their actions. There are people that, especially people in mainstream media or politics, who are very clearly surface theists. They will stand at the pulpit all day long yelling about their belief in a god or some religious program, but their actions don't really bear it out. Mm. Most people that are real theists, whether they're Christian, Muslim, Hindu, Jew, whatever, they tend to be good people. I enjoy interacting with the ones that don't try and proselytize their faith every chance they get. But yeah, if they're theists, I don't have any problem with them. Though we do often tend to disagree about little things like the origin of the universe, where you go when you die, that sort of thing.
I mean, origin of the universe, Catholics, I think we do a pretty good job. Like actual, like, I mean, like genesis of the universe, but like, as far as, if you're talking about like what banged the Big Bang, That may be a disagreement, but the fact that the Big Bang happened, like, I think we're all
there was probably something there billions and billions of years ago.
Yeah, yeah. And so,
which I'll grant you is the one thing as an atheist I can't really posit a worthwhile theory for. Mm-hmm. As a Catholic, you got that one on me.
Well, it's always interesting to me the certainty that people want to get into in that very uncertain situation of what happened before all this. And if you're a deist, right, especially if you're a Christian, I think it's great to take solace in the fact that you do have an explanation that fits into your worldview. I always think it's really interesting when people want to get deep, deep into things that I feel like most human intellect barely grasps as part of that conversation. Like when you get into actual quantum physics, if you're not a quantum physicist, like you're really still grasping at straws. It's like watching a well-intentioned college student try to grasp at deep theology.
Have you ever tried to pick up quantum physics?
No, I mean,
that
like
stuff's weird.
Yeah, no, I mean, it is. And that's the thing. Like, so when a lot of the arguments that get brought up on either side seem so esoteric and abstract that the average person, it always seems like it's taking something on the credence or the faith of an individual. Not everybody. Like for me, I don't feel like I'm just taking something on the credence of somebody else. I feel like I've had an experience. For I know a lot of people who do understand the deep science, they don't feel that way, right? They feel like, hey, I really have a grasp on this. And I think that's wonderful. But I think for a lot of people, there just exists this place where it's kind of like you said, like things are weird. And it's like, hey, we're talking about time not existing and the reality of the eternal and all those things sound.
The difference for me is that I recognize that while physics can be weird there, I can still figure it out. I can still get some explanation. It's fascinating, all of the different physical processes in play, especially when you head toward, well, toward Planck energies and toward the energy and the kind of power in the Big Bang or at any of the weird corners of the universe. There's some explanation there. I don't get it. It's flipping weird. But I know that if I wanted to study long enough, I could come up to speed on humanity's knowledge there.
Right.
Or I could figure out how to push the envelope further. If I felt like it, yes, I could specialize in theoretical quantum physics. I've actually had the opportunity to meet some people who've specialized in theoretical quantum physics.
But as what I love about it, like the fact that all these things are pursuable. And the reality is, like, the great thing for me about being a Catholic specifically, right, which no one cares about, but the great thing for me is I don't have to look at any of those things and think it's trying to tell me something about the creator of the universe that it's not. Because we actually have a pretty rational approach to the way science and faith interact with each other, and that's that they're answering different questions fundamentally.
Because I generally agree with everything you just said.
Yeah.
I too can look at those things and think that they're not trying to tell me something about the creation of the universe that they're not.
Right.
It's just, we believe there's a different prime motivating force.
Yeah. I love anybody who lives in a place of belief where their belief is at a point where it's like, it doesn't matter, but it's just like, hey, I can embrace the reality of things without feeling like the reality of things threatens.
And make no mistake, I live in a place of belief.
One of the last couple things that I like to be able to do with people is just two things, and you don't have to participate in either one of them. But one is just give people a chance to ask me a question. I take a lot away from these conversations, and I'm always happy to respond. But if you don't have one, I'm not actually that interesting, so it's okay.
If at the end of your life, you're, you know, 80, 90 something years old. Oh, let's be optimistic. You're 130.
Okay.
And it's pretty clear your life's about over at this point. And there is now incontrovertible proof that the universe did not have a divine origin. Are you going to look back and think your life is wasted in any way?
I guess I'd like to think no. Because I like to feel like my life exists at service of goodness and truth, and to probably a lesser degree beauty, me personally, not like, you know, other people, or that it's less important, but that my life has been kind of at the service of goodness and truth. And I don't feel like, in some of the ways that we've talked about already, that discovering that truth would immute every truth that I've ever known or learned, because there would be certain moral truths that I would have come to know, whether they were for the good ordering of society or whether they were because they were beneficial for me in pursuing a higher way of being, or whether they were helpful for me in helping other people do that, that I would find value in, even if I found out they were fundamentally wrong. And on the goodness aspect, you know, I don't need faith to be good. And faith certainly doesn't always make me good. Like, I make bad and wrong and selfish decisions regularly that I would prefer to not make, but I do nonetheless. But that wouldn't immute any sort of good that I might have had, people that I would have helped, people that I would have comforted, people that I would have fed or helped clothe or helped take care of, or children that I would have raised, or a marriage that I would have had, or any of those things. So at the end of the day, like, would there probably be some sort of major internal, you know, fallout? Yes. Do I think it would feel like it would invalidate the way that I had lived my life? To this point, I would say, I don't think it would, because I see so much of those good, true, and beautiful things in so many places that don't have anything to do with my particular breed of faith, that I can't imagine then all of a sudden thinking, well, mine didn't have any value.
Cool. You're my kind of theist. Let's have a beer.
And so the other option, and if the answer is no, it's totally okay, is that I offer to pray for the other person, which can seem weird for an atheist. But again, if the answer is no, that's okay.
If it suits you, go nuts.
Right.
Well, this is something that actually has come up over the course of my marriage.
Okay, so let's talk about that real quick before we do
it. Yeah, sure. My wife prays for me with some regularity. I'm fairly certain my mother-in-law prays for me. Hi, Doreen. And it doesn't bother me. Intellectually, I view it as a bit of wasted effort. But if that's what helps bring you either closer to your faith or deepens your sense of community, or for that matter, reminds you that, hey, we should go get a beer.
Mm-hmm.
More power to you.
Yeah.
It's one of those things that doesn't really negatively impact me. So, okay.
Cool. All right. Let's do it then. God, we just ask you to bless Mike. I thank you for this time with him and just for bringing him into a community. And whether that's a community over a couple beers or a community of faith or a little bit of both, we thank you for that. And help us to find just those true and amazing things, those things that, whether they're genesis of a natural order or whether they come from you, God, that speak down to us through hundreds of thousands of years and just call us into this place of spiritual being in these kind of still and silent moments. We ask this through Christ our Lord. Amen. If people want to find you, do you want to be found or do you want to remain hidden for all eternity?
Ooh, there's an interesting question.
Anything you want to plug? Anything amazing you've seen recently that you just want to tell people about?
I moved 2,000 miles and successfully pulled a Bob and found a wonderful little house to live in with my family. And I probably should explain that reference because I think I've mentioned that to you in the past. I say pulled a Bob because that's my father-in-law. Much like my father-in-law, I came out to the Seattle area and shopped for a house, started buying a house without my wife or children ever seeing it. Bob did it. I've done it too. And I now have a house that's 4 or 5 minutes away from where my wife likes to worship, where my kids have a great sense of community. And it's in the middle of a really quiet neighborhood, nice little grove of cedar trees. It's very relaxing. That to me is amazing.
Yeah. And in the greater Seattle area. So if people want to find you, they just got to go track down all the cedar groves in the greater Seattle area.
Go look through every neighborhood that has a couple of groves of cedar trees in it that's within a 4-minute walk of a church, and I'm sure you can find my house. More seriously, if you want to get a hold of me, feel free to contact Tony. I'm sure he'll pass your information along.
Awesome. Thanks, Mike. And we will be back right after this musical interlude with my conversation with my good buddy, Father Colin Parrish. Welcome back, everybody. Every week after I sit down with my guest, I then get a chance to talk with my good buddy, Father Colin Parrish, about what we took away from my interview with our guest. So, Father Parrish, how is it going today?
It's good.
Welcome. You guys can't tell what's going on because podcasting is not a visual medium. Father Parrish has picked up two colored pencils, a green one and an orange one, to be precise, and is playing drums on the edge of his whiskey glass, and he's very excited about it. Hey, how was New York?
New York was a wonderful experience. Yeah. Shout out to Brenda and Danny.
Hi, Brenda and Danny.
And Paolo.
Paolo. You know, I was actually thinking we need to come up with like a cutesy name for like shout outs that's vaguely Threshold and Door themed. So I was like thinking, like, this sounds a little weird. So we got to workshop this a little
Shout
bit.
Out to our gatekeeper.
I was thinking, or like
the key master.
I was like thinking like checking the mail slot, but that sounds a little bit inappropriate. So I don't know that that's gonna gonna work. But I think something along those lines would be good for us to consider. Just FYI,
we gotta like check the Toastmaster.
Check the Toastmaster. No, that's not it.
Oh, okay. Okay.
That's not it. We'll work on it. If you guys have a suggestion, let us know. Drop us a line on Facebook or through our site. I got to sit down with Michael, who is kind of a parishioner at St. Luke's. I mean, he's a parishioner at St. Luke's. He's just not Catholic. And so I was really excited to be able to just have him over for a beer. I've got to hang out a lot with his wife, and I know his kids pretty well, but I hadn't got a chance to meet him. But I would love to hear what stood out at you from my conversation with Michael.
Well, first off, I just wanted to say that he was a nerd, which he
I don't think he's confused about that. He knows it and he owns it.
No, that's why I'm saying it. It was lovely. It was really good to hear, you know, why he, you know, I see him every weekend at Mass and sometimes on other occasions around the parish, and just being able to hear his story a little bit was good. And so I guess kind of what stood out to me was just his continued, there was kind of two points of interest that I had in the conversation. There's more, but the ones that I want to focus on was his continued interest in values, which for me doesn't seem like a self-evident option for
break that open for people who don't understand what you mean.
Well, I mean, it's hard enough like maintaining an ethical stance in front of life, even if you are religious, right? And I think that it was interesting. Like he really sought to search out some kind of virtue to live out in his life.
Yeah.
And he was really attracted to that.
Yeah. But I also think that religion, and this may sound weird coming from somebody who's deeply religious, I think religion ethically can be a little exhausting also. I think that's some of what Michael's actually sharing that kind of stood out to me was this, even if I disagree, this understanding of like what happens when you meddle morality with the divine, right? Like that it is that people, we've talked about this a lot, but like people's understanding of morality versus what the church teaches or what I might believe about morality, which is that not so much about right or wrong, but about encountering life more deeply. Those, if I didn't have that perspective, if it was just moralistic based out of fear or trying to do the right thing, that just seems really exhausting.
Well, no, it is. I mean, I totally agree there. I mean, but what I'm trying to say is that his entry point into, you know, what does it mean to live a good life is filled with values.
Yeah.
And ones that would be universally recognized in the Western world as predominantly good values.
Right.
And so, you know, he's a classic kind of case where, you know, you can point to the fact of saying like, you don't have to be a Christian to be a good person.
Correct.
Exactly. You know, and, and so but nonetheless, like why seek out to be a good person, you know, and that he wanted to, like that there was a value in it for him. There's something attractive for him.
Yeah. And I don't think necessarily this is where his values come from, because we didn't really get into that. But I do love that for him, like the transformational experience of a desire to give and receive love was still at the root of his life. And I think that's a really essential thing. Lots of times ends these like being able to get somebody to articulate, like, what is the thing that you love, or where is the place that you receive love deeply? And for him, it's his wife, Courtney, right?
Yeah.
Like,
and that was
his kids. And that was a really beautiful thing to continually hear.
So that was the other thing that I wanted to hit on, was just like that I was actually more curious about was, you know, what was the root of this love for Courtney? You know, what is his experience of this love for Courtney? Because it's obviously sacrificial. Mm-hmm. I mean, the guy makes a weekly commitment to go participate in his family in a way that, you know, a lot of like dads that are, you know, at least nominally Catholic wouldn't necessarily find meaningful.
Yeah, there are a lot of Christians who do not put the level of sacrifice and energy into going to church every week that, you know, Mike, an atheist, is doing. And that's like really interesting. That was, yeah. I know that's one of the things that originally when I was talking to him and he was like, yeah, I'm an atheist, I was like, oh, like, then I really want to know more about this. Like, I want to know more about like why you do this and what makes you tick, because that's a really amazing thing, right? Mm-hmm. I always love it when somebody gives me a title for an episode also too. Like, you know, like I love it when somebody has a story that like really builds around the experience. So even just being able to ask him like, what is the good you experience from this, and hearing like his atheist, like, don't make hot chocolate story, like, mm-hmm. was really interesting, which I like, for our listeners out there who are atheists, like, I do want to acknowledge, I know that there's a lot of atheists out there who do really good, conscious, compassionate outreach. But it is really interesting to think about like, okay, like, where are the differences there? What are the structures in place to help people maximize the good that they're doing? And how, what's that interplay between religiosity and secular and a secular reality that maybe need to be explored a little bit more?
Yeah. And it was, you know, the other thing was, this is kind of almost going into the question section for Michael, you know, if I had a question for Michael.
Yeah, go ahead.
But, you know, like he kept talking about the supernatural or the divine. I really would have loved to have heard what his definition of that was.
Mm, yeah.
And, because when he, you know, when he had his, like, the spiritual experience of, how do I put it well, where he disavowed himself of all spiritual experience.
Right.
You know, that, like, what, like, for him, why does he, and this isn't supposed to be a comment that's a veiled critique, it's more an honest question, like, why do you consider that a spiritual experience, right? Mm-hmm. Like, in other words, like, you obviously had some kind of transcendent
moment
that was communicated to you, where a truth, at least some kind of truth, was communicated to you, and you recognized that it wasn't from your own doing, right?
Right.
And so I wanted to hear more about that. That was interesting to me.
Yeah, I think mine goes the same, kind of along the same lines. And like, my question would have been, if we had more time, and certainly I'll get a chance to spend time with Michael again, would you ever want to experience that again?
Yeah.
Like, would you desire, because for me, I think a lot of times my transcendent experiences are oftentimes rooted in an experience of wonder or awe or curiosity. Mm-hmm. About, and like, we as church have like language built up around that, but just, I mean, it's basic, like the ability to go out and look up at the stars and realize either your insignificance, right, and mm-hmm. in the light of the universe, or your potency in the face of all of creation, right, that you exist and have agency in the middle of this vast thing. That can seem like amazing. It can also just, the awareness of like, man, this place that I live in, this universe, regardless of its origin, is so vast and so much bigger than I am. And that causes questions, right? Like, I would love to know from Michael if he ever has any desire to have more of those types of experience, whatever their origin.
Yeah. And also if I had, you know, gone into, you guys had kind of danced with it a little bit about the Big Bang stuff and science, but I one of the things that, Mike, I'm going to label you just for the sake of brevity right now. It's not supposed to be anything definitive or what I would necessarily really describe you as, because I don't know any of this about. I mean, I'll see you Sunday, so you can tell me if I'm on point or not. Like, and correct me. But the one of the things that I would describe Mike as is like a materialist, right? In the sense that, you know, one of the things I was picking up was that he, for me, just because I hear a historical fact, it doesn't mean it's somehow not spiritual. And I'm not sure that he was posing it in that term, right, in that way. But there was, like, for me, I was like, oh, it's a historical fact that's just makes this reality more cool, right? Like, right. More helpful. Right. I didn't see the dichotomy between the two. I don't know if he was posing that, but Anyway, it was more of like, it was interesting to see like the sense I was getting about the convert, like from his experience was that for him, there may be like a really sharp divide between what he would perceive as material and what he would perceive as quote unquote spiritual, right? Like those two things don't touch.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and you know, I'm not trying to, it was just a way of me trying to like, I was just listening and hearing this and like, well, maybe this could be the case. I don't know.
Yeah.
But he, you know, Mike, you can, correct me later. Anyway, but it was interesting to hear about, kind of the wonder in front of his wife, right? Because there's a really, really fleshy reality in front of him, mm-hmm. right? There's a tangible, concrete person in front of him, that he has a love for and that he gives of himself. And, you know, one of my questions is like, what's the origin of that?
Right.
You know, and, yeah, I would just leave it there.
Good conversation to have.
Yeah, but he just sounds like just a funny dude. I like him.
He does play board games. We did figure out. So,
dude, so many atheists play board games.
I mean, so do a lot of Catholics and Christians.
Speak for yourself.
But they just try to reskin them crappily, and so like so,
do you never know, use that term you know again.
Reskin them. Did you know that there are two things we will note, and these are not shout outs because I do not endorse either of these things. There's a Settlers of Cana, which is
to the Toastmasters
Christian Catan.
Okay.
And then, there's also a game that is being kickstarted right now. That is called the Catholic Game, and it's meant to be Cards Against Humanity, but with Catholic stuff. And, I enjoy Catan, though I've never enjoyed many Catan derivatives. And I'm pretty good at Cards Against Humanity because I'm good at social games, but it really doesn't have any sort of mechanic. It's largely arbitrary. I don't enjoy it. I can play it for a little while before I just get like massively bored. Mm-hmm. And so, because I'd rather just sit around and tell funny stories if that's what we're going to do. But yeah, anyways, people's attempts to do those things are silly. Just play a game well and with good ethics and morals and seek relationships with the people across the table from you.
Whatever, Tony, I'm just going to go listen to the Big M.
The Big M. Oh, man. Yeah. So we've got to get going a little bit, but I discovered a new podcast. I do want to talk about it. And then you can talk about your weird band you discovered.
Oh yeah.
I want people to go check out called Good Christian Fun. If you like our podcast and you consider yourself a recovering Christian or just a Christian with a sense of humor, I would highly encourage you to go check out Good Christian Fun. My son just came in and he's trying to put our dog away.
I don't know if you guys understand, out there in podcast land that, everybody here actually lives in a shack. So
it's just one shack for all of North Seattle.
It's just like one room.
Yeah.
Right. So when like the reason Tony's children are quiet is because they're just sitting there quietly the whole time. Everybody sleeps in the same bed.
Yeah.
It's like the pioneer days.
Just like all Catholic families, all good Catholic families, all co-sleep until the children are 18. And then they build a new bed for that child and their spouse.
And they sleep next to that bed.
Yeah. Or they send them to seminary.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So, Father Paris, did you discover anything new or interesting over the course of the last week that you want to share with people?
Yeah. I've been listening to this band called Ott, which is from, Montreal. Sorry, not Quebec, but Montreal and in Quebec. And they're this kind of postmodern, post-punk band that's just basically doing the thing I always love, which is critiquing just boring secular culture.
So could you break me off a lyric real quick?
Yeah, the refrain of one of the songs called is Beautiful Blue Sky.
All right.
The refrain is, I'm all right. I feel all right. I feel all right. I feel all right. And then he just goes into saying, how's your family? How's your family? How's your family? How's the church? How's the church? How's the job? Fancy meeting you here. And he just keeps saying these kind of really surfacey level, like small talk things that you say to somebody at the bus stop.
The banalities of life.
The banalities of life that kind of, foisomes or, you know, charade around as actual intimacy.
Yeah.
And he just, the whole album is him just poking fun.
Cool. All right. Well, before we close out, I do want to make an invitation to everybody that if you are able, Father Parrish and I, we do not have a budget for advertising. We do not have, any way to actually share this podcast. But if you enjoy the Threshold podcast, we would love to have you consider sharing an episode on Facebook, tweeting a link to a friend, sending somebody a message or a text with the link in it, and just generally trying to make kissy faces at my dog like Father Parrish do.
he's freaking out.
Michael, thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate it. For all the rest of you guys, until we talk next time, get out there, FNF ability, and talk about what really matters.